We are back. It is the DFS Army Fantasy Football Show. I'm joined, of course, by my guy, Flex Matt. I'm Flex Shane. Matt, we had some technical issues last week, so we are recording this now a week later than we anticipated, but we are here today, Matthew, to talk about some of these early best ball leverage points, ADPs we like, ADPs we don't like, and where we can take advantage of those draft rooms. First of all, Matt, you hail out of the great state of Washington, which means you actually can't even partake in the beautiful sport that is, well, game, a best ball. But that's okay. We're here to give the people some nuggets. How you doing, brother?
Some nuggets, yes, Shane. Welcome. You were in the wildfires of Canada last week. I've seen those photos that you sent of the air quality there. I can remember that because there were just tons of wildfires around this area over the last couple of years. I don't remember it a lot when I was younger, but all of a sudden it's a big deal. I think because people are dumber nowadays, it's like, hey, it's been hot as dust for the last, 35 days straight. Let's go out and have a bonfire around a bunch of trees. You know, it's just like people are more stupid today, but I appreciate you allowing me on this foyer here. And yes, I cannot do online, but we finally passed it. We allow the casinos, so I can rock right into a casino nowadays and bet anything that I want, which, you know, it's not the type of place you might think you might find a flex mat frolicking about in a casino. But I am there every now and then in the corner. Shane, you're on mute, but I love you. Thank you for allowing me here. And let's talk about some of these ADPs that are, like you said, yes, in best ball a little bit. I love seeing some of these numbers coming out early here.
We get into it, we gotta just hail from where we come from. And of course, that's the DFSArmy.com website. Fantastic website, man. I'm not sure if you browsed it recently, but every single day, every single contest, we have people, VIP members, winning in these DFS contests. Right now, obviously, we're talking about fantasy football. We're a niche part of this company. I know fantasy football is massive, especially in North America, but we specialize in DFS, daily fantasy sports. Go check it out. We have a few links. Link to the website. Hey, Matt, listen, if you want a month free, just follow the instructions, and you can test out, and you can see how yourself can pay off potentially even a year's membership with a few contests with some of these quality plays. But let's get into it, baby. Let's talk about some of our favorite best ball leverage plays. Matt, let's get into it now. Now, I'm trying to think here for the people. Should we break it down by position group, or do you want to talk about it by round? We should have, I guess, discussed this before the show, but how do you want to approach this?
I don't really want to go by position group or round by round. I think that I want to kind of pick some pockets.
Pockets, baby.
Within some of these early ADPs, and even if you're not doing any best ball stuff, this is how you start to prepare for your redraft. I mean, you start to see where some of these guys are going off, and you know, the common industry fodder is that, you know, I hear it all the time. Oh, these ADPs will correct by the time August rolls around, mainly because the industry starts talking about these leverage plays, and then all of a sudden everybody starts jumping on the bandwagon to kind of no longer have these plays be leverage plays anymore. So I'd love to, or we just continue to talk about it, because as it goes down, then we find deeper leverage plays, which is really awesome. So maybe I would just say, let's pick out some of these leverage plays. I've got a lot written down here, but I'd like to hear what one of your, easy leverage plays. I think there's a couple at the top there that are pretty easy to suss out here.
I think talking about sus, Matthew, we were talking about sus at the start of the show. I am a
don't
little
tell
bit
them why
concerned.
Though. Let them let their minds travel.
Well, we have a good friend of ours. His name is Alan Kozlowski, and if you've listened to any of his content recently, there's some sus comments, but that's okay. We love you, Alan Kozlowski. A little shout out there to our guy, Season Long Says. But listen, right at the very top, man, we gotta talk with purpose here, Matt. And we have a lot of great values as we go down the draft board, but we do know that those first couple rounds, that's where you're really refining. You're building your team around, and those are the cornerstone players. And what we found in general is that in round one, it's become very, very wide receiver heavy. with a few running backs sprinkled in there. One of those running backs who is going right now as the RB2 at a 7.3 ADP is Bijan Robinson. Yes, that same Bijan Robinson, the man we love, the man we know is going to be a superstar, the man was drafted to the Atlanta Falcons because the Atlanta Falcons are going to be a run first team. Everything seems perfect for this guy to smash. The problem is he's going as the RB2 off the board, Matt, ahead of players that have defined themselves in the league, like an Austin Eckler, like a Jonathan Taylor. And the thing that worries me the most is that we're just going to assume that this man's going to walk in, have something like a 60% rush opportunity share. He's going to get something like 75 targets through the air from not quite a rookie, but essentially a rookie with Desmond Ridder as a quarterback. I'm worried that they're just not going to relegate Tyler Allgeier, who, as we've all heard now, has the record for the Atlanta Falcons as a rookie running back in terms of total rush yards as a rookie. They're not just going to relegate that guy to the side. Now, I understand the draft value, Matt. I understand the upside, and people want to smash their leagues. But I'm a little bit worried that we are absolutely drafting him at his peak performance, and there's no wiggle room here. If you're taking Bijan Robinson at the middle of the first round, this guy's got an absolute smash, and I feel like there's so many variables against him. Now, listen, top three or four, fine. Middle of round one, I think it's a little bit too bold. I'm going to fade Bijan Robinson at that ADP. Roast me.
I don't want to roast you at all unless we're talking about roasting something on the barbecue here. Then you're spraying a little Bijan mustard on something you got on from the barbecue. But no, Bijan is a great, you know, the issue is this is best ball. This isn't redraft, right? You're not picking, you're really wanting these guys for some of their spike week opportunities. Yes, you like floor, so that's probably why he's up here. Is he has a nice floor upside combo. So you definitely love him, but it's really tough not to, every time you're faced with the Bijan Robinson, play, it's really hard if Eckler's not there or something like that, that he wouldn't be the option. I think we get a little too over our skis on rookie picks. I got a couple rookies or at least one of them that is in my early talks, but I mean, we love where Bijan has gone. Okay. Now, JJ Zacharyson, who is phenomenal, everybody loves him. Go back if you haven't and listen to his analysis on how running quarterbacks tend to remove value from the players on that offense, which we're looking at Drake London, Kyle Pitts, and Bijan Robinson as high-end assets based off ADPs on all three positions. And there's no way that offense is going to tailor to having three high-end assets. Somebody's going to falter off. Bijan is going to get rushing upside. So we love that. But is his passing floor going to really be there? We don't know. We haven't seen exactly what the offense is going to do. And I would consider Desmond Ridder a mobile quarterback. He has it in the tool set versus he's not a pocket passer. He's not an Aaron Rodgers. So I would say that there has to be some limiting on the pass volume in that offense, which is probably why Bijan Robinson is going two overall, right? So I look at a RB2. Guy like, yeah, RB2. RB2, excuse me. Yeah, so I look at a guy like Austin Eckler, who is going RB3 off the board. I just think the pass volume in LA, right? LA Chargers. Multiple team states here. I just look at Eckler like he's got to be the choice there, or as far back as you can go to get Eckler when faced with Bijan Robinson in the same vicinity. I'd rather go there. I think there is a safer floor there. And then Saquon is right behind him. And with all the injury concerns, which isn't necessarily too much of a concern anymore, I don't think. But either way, you just don't love to draft Saquon anytime. I mean, I like Saquon, but I'm always scared of drafting.
Is this your pick?
Saquon.
Is this your choice? You're just saying hypothetically.
I'm
okay.
Just saying Eckler over Bijan at any point. Bijan is being a little overdrafted, and I think that's a great way to start this off.
let's just look at how the market looks at it, okay, Matt? So these are the latest ADPs from Underdog, okay? So we got Bijan Robinson going around one at Underdog ADP of 7.3. We got Drake London going at 48. We got Kyle Pitts going at 63. Then we got Tyler Allgeier going at 151. Desmond Ridder, Matt, is going off the board as QB 30 at pick 204 overall. It's essentially a free pick, right? So if we're so confident that all these skill position players are going to pay off, why is Desmond Ridder not going higher? Because exactly. We know that for them to pay off, he's going to have a hell of a season, yeah? So yeah. There's just – the market is just so high on this guy. And, I mean, understandably so, right? But I have him baked in, and I'm still just trying to refine my Underdog rankings because the people are hungry, man. Every single day in our Discord chats, where are the best ball rankings? Where are the best ball rankings? We're going to get them. Here's the thing. I don't want to rush it, right? I want to make sure that it's the best quality product. And these things are always going to be changing. They're always going to be evolving as ADPs change. But it's important that we give a good product out to the people. We're close. We're very, very close. My goal is by June 1st. So this week, hopefully, we're going to have it up for the people. I'm baked in at number 10, which doesn't sound like a lot. It's only three positions behind his where he's going in ADP. But I have him ranked behind the aforementioned Austin Eckler. But I'm also happy to take Stephon Diggs and AJ Brown before I take Bijan Robinson. There's just a little bit too much uncertainty there. Matt, give me your first player that we want to talk about.
All right. So this player is going off as RB19 on Underdog. Okay, post his rookie year, in seasons where he has played 14 games or more, his finishes are 10th, 13th, 4th, and 10th in PPR. Right now, like I said, RB19. Guys ahead of him. Okay, sorry, I thought you were raising
I'm listening.
Your hand.
No, I'm listening. Okay, I'm listening. Guys, I know who you're talking about, him. And I love this point. He was on my list, too, so I'm glad we're on the same page with this guy.
Guys ahead of him with question marks, Travis Etienne. It's not that I don't like ETN, and ETN's a great player to pick in an Underdog situation, but again, injured or potentially falling out of favor, it seems like sometimes not too sure. Kenneth Walker, we just don't know exactly the Charbonnet effect there. J.K. Dobbins, Miles Sanders, all going ahead of one Joe Mixon. Okay, Joe Mixon is in a spot right now at RB19 where you can pull off some really amazing lineups. Trying to nestle in Joe Mixon in your just kind of if you come up with the strategy or whatever, if you wait on RB at maybe your the 2-3 turn, something like that, you might be able to end up with a Mixon. I'm fine to let go of an ETN. There, I'm fine to let go of those other running backs, and JSN and Mixon are kind of right next to each other. I would say at any point if you're drafting JSN over Mixon, that's a failure 100% of the opportunity. But the thing about Mixon is he gets touchdowns. He is low key a really amazing pass catching running back.
Yes.
With a lot of opportunity in that offense. Now there's not as much pass opportunity in that offense, but definitely the Bengals are on the goal line, and you can imagine that they're going to be on the goal line rather consistently. Now the Bengals are one of those teams where they are completely happy to give Joe Mixon 19 touchdowns a year. Like, and that's a great season to them. They don't have to feed Ja'Marr Chase so often and consistently that if they're on the 5-yard line, they're passing it. Like, they're going to get Joe Mixon opportunity to get in the end zone. And at RB19, how is that not a smash play? That's got to be wrong, right?
It's an absolute smash play. And listen, the reason that he's going so late is because there's this uncertainty around his potential legal troubles. But we've seen how the NFL handles these, especially like look no further than Alvin Kamara, right? Smoking gun. There's video at a work event. We've already talked about this on the show, so I don't want to reiterate it, but essentially it was a work event. Kamara got into a fight. There's video of it. The man wasn't suspended last year because they want the legal process to play out. Okay, fantastic. Realistically, do we really see, and we're not lawyers here, but do we really see this legal process playing out before next season? No, chances are he's going to play. And when you look at how the Bengals have addressed the position, what did they do? They went out and they drafted Chase Brown, who we like. They've got a player in Travion Williams, who's decent. But none of these guys are really going to challenge him for the RB1 position. And then when you just look at what he did last year and you ask yourself, is he going to be able to repeat that? I mean, the man was getting 14 carries per game, Matt, in addition to 5 targets per game. Absolutely, this man has I would say, Matt, when you look at the entire draft board currently, the one player who's the absolute ability to absolutely smash his ADP and return upwards of probably round one, round two value potentially, that's where he was going. He was going right around mid round two last year. Absolutely, he should be valued there. Absolute smash. I currently haven't baked in because when we're doing our rankings, we do have to take into account ADP. You don't want to just get 100% of exposure of a player. I've got him baked in half a round, which means that if you're going to be using our rankings, you're going to be getting a decent amount of share right now of Joe Mixon. And Matt, one of the things you talked about, especially for those who are partaking in these big tournaments, where you're really going to find success is if you can just look into your crystal ball and say, okay, where the ADP is today, we're recording this on May 28th, where's it going to be in mid-August? And that's how you're going to win leverage against the rest of the field, especially in these big tournament plays like your best ball mania type plays. So I love Joe Mixon, man. I think that's an absolute smash of a position choice.
So next I have to go through to the guy I just mentioned who is right next to him, Jaxon Smith-Njigba. Now get me, color me a Jaxon Smith-Njigba fan. Okay. Here's the thing. This hurts me to say this because it actually is going to hurt me a lot coming into our rookie drafts here. I kind of settled on the idea that I'm not drafting Jaxon Smith-Njigba in our rookie drafts. Everybody has talked about how rookie drafts are done for them, but not for us. In the majority of our leagues, we wait till June. We're in 3 or 4 of them together, and I think we're all drafting them this week. And I've your spoiler alert is I'm not drafting JSN, and it hurts my heart. It really does. There's just a lot of reasons why. I mean, you know, the fact that JSN is being drafted heavily over Tyler Lockett, who is the de facto number two in the offense, is a travesty, number one. I will not have any JSN this year at all. I've come to Jesus on it, Shane. I've come to Jesus on it. Because let me tell you something. The Seahawks run a ton of 12 personnel, which means two tight ends. They're a run-first offense, and they don't care about your fantasy football team, okay? You have DK Metcalf. You have Tyler Lockett. You have Charbonnet, who they're going to get involved in the pass game. I believe that's really why they drafted him, not just for injury backup on Ken Walker, but I think they're also looking to target a lot of the intermediate area of the field, which also is why they drafted JSN. So I'm really hoping JSN gets a lot of that opportunity. But the way that the Seahawks play offense, it's a very they look downfield. If it's not there, we're getting the dump off the intermediate. We got an outlet somewhere there. But 12 personnel means we're likely not to see JSN on the field in a lot of that. And my favorite thing to listen to when I'm listening to the industry podcasts is, man, you're really going to be kicking yourself for the JSN pick at wide receiver 29, somewhere by Joe Mixon in your overall. You're really going to be kicking yourself when you see Will Dissly on the field over Jaxon Smith-Njigba. It's going to be, you're going to hate it. I mean, you're really, really going to hate when you see that because you know JSN. You just pop JSN at tight end. I mean, if the tight end's going to run around, you might as well just line him up right there, right? But let's be real. You should be drafting JSN 25 picks later or something like that, or even 25 wide receiver spots later or something like that because he's way too high. And he's right next to Mixon. At ADP, and you should be drafting Mixon there. Like Shane just said, I mean, we're waiting for the industry to course correct on this, but the course correction is going to be in our favor when we're just going to be drafting those guys now. So smash Mixon over JSN at ADP and be 2 or 3 rounds behind on JSN. I understand the rookie love. I do. And like I said, I'm a homer. I'm from Washington State. But here's the thing, Shane. I'm going to let go of JSN in almost every one of my fantasy leagues, and I'm going to favor watching him in real-life football every single chance that I can, and that's probably good enough for me on him for at least a couple years. I mean, I don't see Tyler Lockett leaving anytime soon, and I think Tyler Lockett might be the type of receiver that does take the hometown discount just to kind of stick around, be a mentor. The guy's a man of faith. He's a leader, and I just see Tyler Lockett. I mean, he's the kind of guy that he might be 34 years old, taking a $1 million contract just to stick around. You know, it's like, yeah. And so you may not see JSN for a couple years get to his ceiling, and that's okay for real football, poor for fantasy football.
Yeah, and I think there's a few nuances here, right? I mean, this is not a dynasty take. This is a redraft seasonal one-year take, and I do agree with it. I mean, so what I find a little bit cockamamie right now, Matt, is the fact that you see Tyler Lockett going at pick 67 overall, whereas Jaxon Smith-Njigba is going at 59 overall, okay? So the way that I have it baked into my rankings currently is I've got Lockett about four spots ahead of his current ADP. I got JSN 12 spots behind, so a full-on round ranked behind. So now if he falls a full round, then yeah, I give you permission to draft this player. Now, just again, another nuanced take to that, Matt, is that I would be more inclined to take a shot at JSN around his ADP to get a, you know, you want to sprinkle in a few shares if you are participating in one of these big tournament type contests, right? If you're just in a standard 12 person or even, you know, whatever 10 person league, it's in its own little vacuum. It's not comparing to any other tournament play. I don't have a problem with that. And the reason I say I would be more inclined to take a shot at JSN in a tournament type play is because in those types of setups, the last few weeks of the seasons, 15, 16, and 17, those are the championship weeks, okay? So you need your players to absolutely smash in those championship weeks, meaning that there's a possibility, there's a real possibility that JSN, who we love as a player, he's my top wide receiver in the rookie class this year, we've seen these rookies, especially the high-end elite rookies, they peak midway to late in the season, and that's where he's going to be putting up his real fantasy points, right? We've seen DK Metcalf been injured. We've seen Tyler Lockett in the past be injured. Generally speaking, quite healthy player, but he's getting older, could be more inclined to be injured. That's the type of opportunity and the type of risk you want to take, because that's how you're going to win one of these tournaments, is by smashing it. And you really need to get lightning in a bottle to win one of these massive tournaments. So that's where I would be okay drafting JSN. But in just a standard league where you're just competing against 11 other managers, it's just so risky because every single week counts equal. So if you have half a season where he's a wide receiver three on his team, that's not going to help get you that championship because every single week matters and every single week is weighted equally. So I like that take. Okay, I'm going to give you one here, Matt, because right now, and I know this is the nittest pick of the nitpicks, okay? But right now, we see Garrett Wilson going one spot ahead of Amon-Ra St. Brown. And I get it. Like, we all love Garrett Wilson. We saw what he did as a rookie. It was amazing what he did, especially with relatively incompetent quarterback play last year, right, as a Jets. The thing is Amon-Ra St. Brown, we know locked in, is the de facto wide receiver one in that offense. You know he's going to be an absolute target monster once again this year. And we both love Jameson Williams. We both think to the moon for that type of player. But if you know for sure that Amon-Ra St. Brown is going to be getting the lion's share of that offense, I mean, he could get at least 30% target share, right? Like, that's the type of player that he is. Yes, we think Jahmyr Gibbs is going to break into that a little bit. But listen, Amon-Ra's the guy, right? So if we're just trying to nit those picks, I have Amon-Ra St. Brown ranked one spot above Garrett Wilson. And most of the time, I'm going to be taking him at that position. And it seems like that's a bit of a controversial take. The one thing we do know is that Aaron Rodgers does like to flavor one wide receiver when that wide receiver's name is Davante Adams. But he did bring in a bunch of his buddies, right? I saw this the other day, so I can't take credit for this. But it's kind of hilarious how one of Aaron Rodgers' issues with the Packers was they were never going to give him the wide receivers he wanted. Like, just give me my wide receivers. Give me my elite wide receivers. And then those non-elite wide receivers are the guys that he's dragging with him over to the Jets. It's shocking to me. It's shocking. It's outrageous. Aaron Rodgers, that's a whole different conversation. I'm taking Amon-Ra St. Brown, the sun god.
Yes, that's not a hot take at all. I think
it's not.
the industry is very heavy on the debating this right yes. now, just this exact thing. I think most people are taking Amon-Ra for sure. But you know, there is a lot of good things to glean about Garrett Wilson and that offense, but you're 100% right. I think when faced with it on the clock, I think you definitely have to go Amon-Ra, but if you're trying to go sick with it and 100% upside, you could definitely theorize how Garrett Wilson could end up having a Jamar Jefferson type, you know, career. Wide receiver one season out of nowhere. You know, maybe Aaron Rodgers just completely degaffs and says, we're just going to make this guy the next big thing, the next it yeah. factor, the next everything. And I think Aaron Rodgers really wants that. I mean, I don't think he doesn't want the hype in New York. But what I thought was hilarious is when he mentioned this weekend, Aaron Rodgers, when asked about Garrett Wilson, is he said, yeah, Garrett Wilson is just like my favorite receivers. You know, Davante Adams, Randall Cobb, Jordy Nelson, didn't mention the guy he brought along with him from. Yeah. So
Lazard.
Yeah. I just thought it was,
I mean, come
funny.
On.
Yeah. Lazard knows he's just a guy, right? I mean, he's the guy, you know. Tyler Lockett took a very similar type deal that Lazard took a couple years ago. And I thought that they were undervaluing themselves. But again, it's a guy like Tyler Lockett has outperformed that contract, where Lazard is only getting that contract as a comfort piece to Aaron Rodgers. Okay, so let me talk about this. This is something quick. This is something quick on this. Late round tight end is probably the play again this year. I understand your top four guys, right? But if you don't get the top four guys, I think that it's quite all right again to kind of just lay and pray and wait on a couple of these guys. So the difference between tight end 12 and tight end 6 last year was 20 points. Okay. So tight end 12, you could find in the picks 144. I mean, Tyler Higbee was 6th last year and is being drafted at tight end 16 at pick 150. You know, so it's not to say that some of these guys can't pop off. It's just their ADP right now is being viewed without any upside, it seems like, because they just imagine, well, if there's nothing that comes from these guys, then they're absolutely wasted picks. And I understand that. But Higbee was 6th last year without Matt Stafford. Maybe Matt Stafford gets back and decides to, you know, throw it all over the field again in a last swan song, because it seems like he's on his way out. Obviously, Cooper Kupp is going to be the beneficiary of a lot of that, but Tyler Higbee's probably going to be number two. Just not number two as far as where they're looking, but he's an outlet. He's always going to be there. He's a good player. He's consistent. So I look at late round tight end as if you absolutely can't get Kelce or if you can't get Andrews. And that's probably where I'm at. I'm not drafting Pitts. I'm probably okay with Kittle. But outside of those guys, I'm not going to go high on somebody that, like a Goddard, when I don't need to. Again, the dividing 6 to 12 was 20 points, which could come in one game. So you erase one game from some of these guys and they're tight end 6, you know? So it's just something that I'm probably not doing this year is up on tight ends.
So for me, Matt, to me, like, if you don't want to spend a lot of high draft capital, I don't have a problem with that. I find I'm getting a lot of Darren Waller, Evan Ingram, or David Njoku right around like round eight, right around pick 100, which is right around after ADPs. And like, I'm willing to spend a little bit higher on a player like Darren Waller. I mean, so I see your point, but if you're going to take that strategy where you just fade the hell, especially in these best balls, make sure you get 3, right? So that at least you have, hopefully, you're rolling the dice, not just once.
That's the
you're rolling it 3 times. Yeah,
That's the play, is you wait until the end and then you kind of smash, 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 hope for one of them to cross that threshold up into that 7 or 8. And if you do, then that's a great best ball pick. That's a phenomenal way to go, is to try to let, you know, spray the prey and then hit one of them, you know. So that's one late round thing I wanted to talk about. The next one is, are we just fading bad team, like bad team offenses here? Because I think it is absolutely incredible, incredible that guys like John Mechie is going at like wide receiver 80, pick 184. Yeah, that's ridiculous, because he's could be the number one on that team. That's ridiculous. Number two, Wandale Robinson. Why is?
Can I just say something quickly about the Texans? So just, I think it was just this morning or yesterday, DeAndre Hopkins, who was recently released by the Arizona Cardinals, flashed a little photo outside of Energy Stadium in Houston. Wouldn't that be wild? Because guess what? Bill O'Brien, he ain't a Texan anymore. He's now with the Patriots. So could it be? Could he go back? It would make absolutely no sense for a man who's trying to build a legacy and probably maybe win a Super Bowl. Maybe he's just in Houston, but...
Well, that's the thing. Are these guys actually trying? Like, what? Like, Hopkins hasn't been the guy that has blatantly came out like, I want to win a Super Bowl. He just wants to play with a quarterback that loves the game. So I don't look at a guy like Hopkins like he is in the media like, I'm trying to go win a Super Bowl. He picked the Ravens on one of those things, you know, and the Chargers on one of the teams he said he wanted to play with. I doubt he's picking the Ravens because he thinks the Ravens are going to go win a Super Bowl. Like,
well,
no, they're not. I mean, they're really not. So, but understandably, if he goes back home, he is going to play with a quarterback that loves the game. CJ Stroud definitely loves the game. The D'Amico Ryans is a player's coach from all reports. He's a guy that loves his guys, goes after his guys, as you can see with Will Anderson. And he's probably trying to build a culture there. I think I would love to see that. And they could probably pay him, you know, what he might want. In the end, it's all about money. He's not the one going out there talking about legacy. If he did, he would just be like, get me to a Super Bowl winning team. Patrick Mahomes, come find me. Like, he's not saying that. He is saying he wants to play the game with a quarterback that loves the game. And that's great.
He just happened to list off five teams that were all in potential quarterback, like Super Bowl contention though, right?
Yeah, but I mean, what other quarterbacks love the game like that? I mean, he didn't mention the Jets, which are probably the best fit for him.
Yeah, because we know Aaron Rodgers doesn't love football.
Come on. He loves football. He hates me
and he hates football, man.
So Wandale Robinson, John Mechie, those are guys that at the end of your drafts, I can't see how you don't come away at ADP with both these guys who could be de facto number ones in their offense. So that's the two things. Late round tight end, Mechie, Wandale Robinson at the end. I've got a couple more here, Shane, but do you?
Sure. I have a bit of a – if you got some cornflakes, I wouldn't mind taking a little – breaking them, because I find that Breece Hall right now, where he's being drafted, is still just a little bit rich for my blood, man. A guy's coming off the ACL, and I understand that he seems to be healing well. And, you know, if he's going through camp and we're in July and it looks like everything's healthy, then I'm gonna be okay with this take, in which case his ADP will probably increase. But even in mid-round three, man, I'm still a little bit reluctant to be drafting Breece Hall coming off the ACL injury last year. It wasn't like it happened early in the season. It happened on October 23rd last year. All reports that he's healing well, but 9 months puts us right at the start of training camp. So if he goes into the training camp and he's able to cut on at 100%, yes, I know that we've seen him kind of off to the side, and the man is superhuman. I'm just a little bit worried about Breece Hall. They did go out. They do have a little bit of depth behind him. They drafted Israel Abanikanda, and I don't think that the Jets are doing that unless – because they've already got a few players on that team, like Zonovan Knight, like Michael Carter, that we, you know, they're decent plug and play from the NFL perspective. I'm a little bit worried about Breece Hall, where he's being drafted. Now, where I have him baked into my actual rankings right now, I'm only a few spots behind his ADP just because there's that little pocket. But if you talk about players that could start the season slow, I feel like Breece Hall definitely is a candidate for that.
Yeah, I don't think Breece Hall is where he is because people aren't worried about him. I think Breece Hall is where he is at RB10. Because look at RB 11, 12, and 13. Are you picking any of those guys over Breece Hall? Like right now, even with ADP baked in, like you might look at in that case, in your theory,
yeah.
Are you drafting ETN, you know, Ken Walker, JK Dobbins, no. At value over Breece? Because I mean, like I said, I think everything you said, I'm still taking Breece Hall where he is, because I'm not taking those guys ahead of Breece Hall.
Yeah, and I understand. Listen, like if he was 100% healthy, like there's a chance he'd be being drafted like early round two, right? Like, so I get that we're getting almost a round and a half discount versus if he was 100% healthy coming into the season. I get it. I'm thinking Ramondre Stevenson over him. I've got DK Metcalf ranked ahead of him. He's right in that pocket with Lamar Jackson as well. And I currently have Breece ahead of Lamar Jackson just, again, because of the positional values. But I would certainly consider taking Lamar Jackson if you want to just get sick for that upside. And listen, that's where these running backs or quarterbacks are going, right? Like, I've got him ranked as my QB4. Underdog has him as ADP as QB4. So that's the type of decision you're trying to make. And we know what Lamar Jackson is, right? And I understand, again, if it's a health conversation and we're putting him one-to-one, it's like, okay, Shane, what are we talking about here? It's not like Lamar Jackson is just a poster boy for health. I get it. I understand that. But when you talk about just nuclear upside in your league, the difference a player like Lamar Jackson can make over a player like Breece Hall, to me, seems like that I like that upside a little bit more, in which case I actually might even have to adjust my ranking. But again, I'm nitpicking, but at this stage of the draft, Matt, we have to nitpick, right? Because this is how you're going to
find leverage. Can I talk about true nuclear upside? I will argue for the opposite. Is
a Breece?
To me, true nuclear upside is Breece Hall. I mean, you look at Aaron Rodgers, and he has fed Aaron Jones for many years. I mean, true. Aaron Jones has been an awesome, awesome dynasty fantasy asset tethered to Aaron Rodgers. Now, not to mention, you're going to have to imagine they have a stellar, stellar defense. So yes. They're going to have the ball a lot more. Aaron Rodgers is the type of guy that will score touchdowns. So when you look at a guy like Garrett Wilson, we love Garrett Wilson, right? We love Aaron Rodgers for being able to score 27 points a game. They have a great defense. It's the same thing as the Joe Mixon corollary, where that offense is going to be on the goal line very often. And I love Aaron Rodgers, but if he's not throwing a fade to Garrett Wilson, it seems like 100% of the opportunities going to the running back there. And nuclear upside is Breece Hall can catch. Breece Hall can score touchdowns. Breece Hall's going to get the ball on first down. He's going to get opportunity. He's going to get dump offs, which are easy fantasy points. Breece Hall at RB10 is probably looking at 17 points a game. I mean, on plus in my eyes, when healthy and active in the offense. So at RB10, I'm taking that over. I mean, I like Ramondre. I probably would say, right, those two guys are great because Ramondre's got sneaky, great upside in the pass work, and he's big. He's big barreling running back, and that offense kind of sucks. You know what I mean? So it kind of runs right through Ramondre. So it's like the opposite factor for Ramondre. But I don't see Ramondre going nuclear versus Breece Hall could have a pretty nuclear year this year. You just can see it, at least.
So Ramondre Stevenson played 17 games last year. Breece Hall obviously only played 7 because of the injury. Very, very similar. Okay, in terms of this is full PPR points, so understanding the underdog's 0.5, but this is full PPR. Breece Hall had 16.44 PPR points per game last year. Ramondre Stevenson 14.65. But when you talk about an opportunity share, it's actually very, very similar. So we talk about carries per game. Last year, Breece Hall was 11.4, so let's call it 12. Ramondre Stevenson 12.3, let's call it 12. almost identical, right? Targets per game, Breece Hall, 4.5 targets per game. Ramondre Stevenson, surprisingly, 5.3. Let's round it up. 5 targets per game. Almost identical opportunity share there, right? So then it's a question of who do we think is going to be more efficient in their offenses? Well, I guess you could argue that if the Jets are going to be a better offense in general, maybe Breece gets a few more touchdowns. And so, yeah, if you're just looking at a pure projections, then there's a possibility. I'm just not 100% confident that Breece Hall is going to be the same Breece Hall as last year, right? It's just, we see it all the time with these players coming off ACLs where, yes, there's the anomalies like Adrian Peterson where they get the comeback player of the year, but more often than not, there's a bit of a slow start. And even though Breece Hall is, quote, playing at full strength, we all know he's not at full strength, right? And it takes a good half of the season to get back into that playing shape, a full year removed from the injury to where they really start to electrify and score those points. So, and then there's just bake into the fact that there's a possibility for re-injury, right? When you're coming off and you're healing, the body can overcompensate, which can lead to a higher injury. So again, I'm not saying Breece Hall is a bad pick. I love Breece Hall as a player. I really do hope for a few of my dynasty shares of him that he does just absolutely light it up the way we think that he can. But at that stage of the draft, when we're nitpicking, I just like the upside or the safety, I should say, of like a player like Ramondre Stevenson. When we're getting to that similar opportunity share, I'm, as a Patriots fan, the Patriots aren't going to be great this year, but they are absolutely going to be better next or versus last year because they just had an incompetent play calling. And Mac Jones' superpower, if he has a superpower, is just his ability to read defenses, change plays, adjust on the fly. It's his football IQ that's his strength. And when you're running a peewee style offense, you're not going to play to that man's strength. Overall, I think the Patriots are going to be better than people think. Are they going to be the fourth team in the AFC East? Maybe. But I think that's still going to be a very, very competitive division because all four teams are good. Ramondre, Breece Hall, just trust the fact that Ramondre not coming off an ACL injury.
Yeah, see, like right now, a lot in the industry have the Bills taking the step back this year, which is incredible to say. Well, the division is stellar. So it's like when you look at the Bills, you look at the Jets, you look at the Dolphins, and then you look at the Patriots, it's like, well, Jets, Dolphins are kind of on the way up, where Bills...
Yeah.
I don't know, you know, they still have running back concerns. If you're not a James Cook guy, so it's
I got
just
Damian Harris. He's competent. He's
they got
competent.
Damian Harris, the guy
he's better than Devin Singletary.
Maybe. I mean, who knows?
Yeah.
I mean, who knows? But okay. So, to finish this podcast, I'm going to give you two, or maybe I'll give you one, I got two guys.
Give them to me, baby.
Left.
Give them to me.
That I think are extreme value plays. And I say this for you know, I say kind of lightly. I don't mean extreme, but I just look at this. I think my number one sleeper this year, and I wouldn't say he's a sleeper. I just say I don't understand why we're not talking about this player more. Pick 71 at wide receiver 35. I would say you're talking about a wide receiver 3 that on any given week could put up wide receiver 1 numbers. And why? Why could this player put up wide receiver 1 numbers? Well, it's Patrick Mahomes' number one receiver, Shane. His name is Kadarius Toney, okay? Yes. A guy who can clearly be schemed in the offense. We saw that in the Super Bowl. I understand there's a lot of people there that can peel away from that pass work, but I like that. I like the idea that Kadarius Toney is not going to have shaded coverage over him. He's not a DK Metcalf. He's not requiring that from the defense. So what the defense is going to do is saying, okay, we'll just kind of see what happens. Well, week after week, that means that Kadarius Toney can find pockets. I think that the offense is going to be able to allow him to succeed, and he's probably the only guy in that offense at the receiver side.
Yeah.
He's the only guy in that offense where I think the scheme is actually going to be worked for him versus, okay, we have Sky Moore. We have, you know, your rookie. I forgot his name off the top of my head.
Rashi
Rice. Yep. We have guys here. So here's the play, Patrick, find the open guy. But the number one look's going to be Kelsey, obviously, and then Tony. And then basically, if the two reads are not there, look for McKinnon, look for an out, right? I don't think they're going to be looking for receivers as outs. They're going to look for a running back as outs. That's something they've shown. I just like Tony. I think for wide receiver 35, I'm going to hit the button every time at pick 71. Shane, if you're looking at it, can you give me about five guys that are around Kadarius Tony at pick 71? And let's say if you'd rather have Patrick Mahomes as number one receiver or these five guys.
All right. Just give me a moment here. You kind of caught me off guard. Let's go to 71. We're good. So, yeah, at pick 71, I would say, like, you're choosing between guys. These are guys who are going after him, okay?
Let's go one before him.
Okay.
And then a couple after.
A few players going before him. So we got Jordan Addison and DeAndre Swift and Isaiah Pacheco, his teammate, going right before him.
I'm talking about receivers. So we have
Jordan Addison
as the rookie wide receiver two in a high pass volume offense. I agree. But, I mean, it's not Patrick Mahomes. Okay, so would you pick Jordan Addison or Kadarius Toney?
Obviously.
Nope, it's not even an ah.
Here's the thing. In terms of pure talent-wise, I think that Jordan Addison is hands down a better player. So at this point, we're trying to define, okay, yes, he's still a rookie. So, yeah, probably Kadarius Toney. Probably. Then there's Treylon Burks, who's George Pickens, Treylon Burks, and Marquise Brown. Right after him.
Absolutely not. So when you look at those spread of guys, I mean, you could even give me one more ahead of Addison, even as a wide receiver.
Your boy, Tyler Lockett. I'm taking Tyler Lockett.
That's about where you could go.
It's a sweet spot.
So right there, right after Tyler Lockett, when you look at the guys that are going to be bunched up at receiver, Jordan Addison, Treylon Burks, George Pickens, which is a wide receiver three in his own offense, versus the wide receiver one in a Patrick Mahomes-led offense, I'd rather shoot the upside, okay, especially if I have a Mahomes team in underdog. So if I drafted Mahomes, I might go way ahead of Tyler Lockett. I mean, not way ahead, just as far as my rankings and what the value is on the player. I'm still going to take Tony where he's at, but I'm just saying the Mahomes-Tony stack, if you're on a Mahomes team, that shoots Tony's value way high.
We've seen in a lot of these underdog tournaments that there's a real correlation that gives you an edge if you do the stacking. And you can realistically, in the first round, take Travis Kelce, come back in round two and take Patrick Mahomes, and wait and choose whichever wide receiver you prefer. If you prefer Kadarius Toney, again, he's only going to pick 71. That's not a huge investment. If you don't love Kadarius Toney at his price, you can wait a little bit. Wide receiver 56 going off the board, Sky Moore, who we loved last year before the season started, that it didn't look too great. And then the rookie Rashee Rice is going at wide receiver 59. And if you just hate any of that, you could also fade everybody and just go with MBS, Marquez Valdez-Scantling, going at wide receiver 69 at 156 overall. So you could just do a quad stack if you really want it.
You know what's really trashy is that you could honestly theorize $1 million team starting with Kelce, Mahomes, and then waiting to draft wide receiver one until you get to Tony, and just take those 4 to 5 games where you're definitely going to be the highest scoring team in the week. And it's just, again, when you get up to monsters like that, I remember it's like when Ja'Marr Chase hit the 50 burger in your fantasy football championships, no team was beating that team. Like, you just all of a sudden went up against a monster. It didn't matter how great of a team you had. When you go up against those monsters in week 16 and week 17, you're going to falter. And that's what we're doing here, Shane. Okay, who do you got? Like, one of your final guys here. Okay, a sleeper. I got a nice sleeper. I'm going to bet on this guy next. So
I'm just going to talk about an old guy who all he does is put up fantasy points. I actually like this value. I think this is a solid value. I'm willing to take. I've got him ranked 2 spots ahead of his ADP, but because you're not going to have to reach on this player, because right now the Arizona Cardinals are just expelling all of their talent on their team. We don't assume Kyler Murray is going to play for the first half of the season, which means they're going to rely heavily on the run game. And James Conner, going as RB 26, man, 83 overall, To me, that seems like an absolute screaming value, especially if you go with one of these hero RB builds and you only take one RB to start to draft. You don't have to wait until round 7 to get your RB2, James Conner. You could easily have, what, 250 touches, total touches on the season, right? There's not much behind him. There's Keontae Ingram behind him. That's pretty much it. And Keontae Ingram, for the people, is going to pick 215. He's basically going undrafted. So when your RB2 in that offense is being drafted or undrafted and more chances than not, to me, that means James Conner is an absolute screaming value.
Yep. Nope. James Conner is going to be great. Another one is Michael Wilson. Now that that Hopkins is gone, the rookie.
Play
I'm not saying
the damn song.
How
Michael
dare
Wilson?
You? How
Michael
dare
Wilson?
You? How dare you? Okay, hey. Michael Wilson is a good product coming out of Stanford this year. He just now. I mean, I just think that there's nobody else there to play the X receiver.
Yeah.
So that, and that means he's going to be on the field every single snap. So, I agree with what you're saying. Connor's yeah. going to be a really, really incredible smash play this year, especially in redraft. I've never drafted James Conner, and I think this year I might end up with James Conner like a lot. I just, you know, the receivers are really showing out in fantasy football. It's starting to become a receiver-led dynasty market, a receiver-led redraft, a receiver-led underdog. I mean, so it's just a matter of which one. I think there's a lot of guys that can bust out, but I think there's a lot of value. Like I said, that'll course correct. I look at Tony like he's like if I switched Drake London and Kadarius Tony as far as like in projections, you could see that. I think Drake London's going 24 or 25. He's wide receiver, you know, like I said, a de facto wide receiver too. I don't think that what's his face at QB is going to be able to Desmond Ridder's going to be able to support Drake London this year if Kyle Pitts actually comes back right, and then Bijan, which is supposed to be a pass catching opportunist. So again, you know, I think you might be able to transpose Kadarius Toney where Drake London is. I think that's where he's gonna finish. Okay, so my last guy here, Shane,
me, baby. Let's...
this is getting deep, but I'm gonna tell you right now, the running quarterback is stellar for fantasy football. Okay, we know that. Okay,
yes
number one quarterbacks without competition on offenses that actually aren't that bad. Okay, guys like Terry McLaurin are still getting drafted extremely high. Jahan Dotson, you really like. You got two running backs in Washington that can carry the rock. Okay, they have a defense that, you know, I'm not too sure how great the defense is, but great or not, middle of the pack defense, that means that the ball is going to have to be in the hands of one Sam Howell this year. Sam Howell is a running quarterback, okay? Sam Howell also probably knows that this is the only opportunity that he's going to be getting in the NFL, which is this year, because next year, if he does not absolutely show out, the Washington Commanders, which may have to change their name now into the Washington something or other, probably to the football team. Back to the football team. It's a travesty of an offense led by a team that probably hates the guys. Anyway, Sam Howell, look at him, love him, draft him. I believe he's going at QB 39 or something like that.
29 right now.
I mean, yeah. The guy could easily see QB 224 overall numbers on a week-to-week basis. 250 yards through the air, 2 touchdowns. We got Terry McLaurin. We got Jahan Dotson. Okay, we got guys that we think can produce in the offense. And then he's a running quarterback. He could get you 75 yards just running all over the field. I love Sam Howell. I want to buy Sam Howell. How expensive is Sam Howell in Dynasty right now? Even if you drafted the guy.
I bet you could probably get him for a late round 2 pick, right? Like, you know where Hendon Hooker's going?
Yeah, but I don't
maybe
like
a little bit ahead of that.
I don't like that. I don't want to give my late round 2 for him, but if I could squeeze a 3 out of somebody for him.
Yeah, but you know, in Superflex, realistically, man, nobody in Superflex is going to give away a starting quarterback for less than a round 2 pick. You know that. That'd be incompetent. I mean, this is what worries me about Sam Howell, okay? So one of my favorite websites for where I get all my data anyways is playerprofiler.com. So shout out to them. But his best comparable player is Sam Darnold. I just laugh because they've got a Lego head for Sam Darnold's head. But Sam Howell, yes, he in college was a fantastic rusher. In his third year at North Carolina, he ran for 828 rushing yards, which is fantastic. The problem is, Matt, he has a 7th percentile speed or 40 time, which is a 28th percentile speed score at 507. So he ain't like, yes, he can run. He did run in college. I wouldn't consider him a running quarterback, brother.
Do you mean? How would you not consider him a running quarterback? The guy's got 800 yards on the ground.
Yeah, like, in college.
It doesn't matter. The guy, watch his tape. A running quarterback is somebody that can do it. In the NFL, Aaron Rodgers is not a running quarterback, right? Trevor Lawrence is not necessarily looked at as a running quarterback. Sam Howell runs the football, and he can. He has it in his repertoire, okay?
That we're going to end the show on just an absolute filthy, nasty, dirty tick about Sam Howell. But it's okay, man. We'll forgive you, Matt, this time.
This is best ball. I mean, the idea about it is you want to hit on a couple of these weeks on a quarterback that's at the very end of your drafts, who has rushing upside, who has two stellar receivers that are being drafted in the top 80 of picks or whatever. Yeah. Again, just like Ridder, in order to support this, you have to be able to think that guys like Ridder can do it. I would vote on Sam Howell over Ridder because of the supreme rushing upside that Howell has. Look for it. Just, hey, by week 6, you can tell me if I'm crazy or not. We'll see.
I frankly don't want either, but that's just my very humble opinion, Matt. Okay, we're gonna end it there. We got a lot of nice nuggets for you. We got some nasty Michael Wilson takes, love it. We got some nasty Sam Howell takes. I would expect nothing less from our guy Flex Matt.
If I wasn't here, what would you do without me? You know what I mean?
No, we would be talking about high fun upside players like Breece Hall all the time. That's just boring. It's not what the people want, man.
Everybody talks about those guys.
Exactly. We bring you the nuggets here, ladies and gentlemen. So, of course, all of our content's over at DFS Army. For all of our VIP subscribers, I promise you we will get you the underdog best ball rankings very, very soon. Thanks for tuning in. And we're out. Sheesh. Every time, knowing that.